Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, Augie.
Hi, you have reached WWPR 1490 AM radio. Please leave a message and we'll call you back soon. If we are off the air or this is an emergency, please call 941-504-0889. Hi, you have reached WWPR 1490 AM radio. Please leave a message and we'll call you back soon. If we are off the
Hello?
Hi, it's Mitch. It's Mitch.
Okay.
I lost you on the other number, and then I called back, but it's busy. You have to keep me in the you can't put me in a hold mode. You have to put me right on the air.
You were on the air. Or,
I didn't hear anything.
I had it so that you were on the air, and the volume was already up.
Oh, really? All right, I'll call back that number, and you have to hang that other number up, and I'll call back on it.
Okay.
All right?
Okay.
All right.
Okay, bye.
All right, thanks.
Mitch?
Yeah.
All right, I'm putting you back.
Okay.
A surge in demand for commercial aircraft.
Wait, I need your attention for a second, Mitch.
Yeah, I can hear the show then.
Okay, good. Are you doing Pod-O-Matic?
No, I'm doing Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, can you do Pod-O-Matic, or do you know the password? What are you doing?
I don't know the password to Pod-O-Matic. But he should record the show there. You know,
yeah,
I'm
going to record the show here, but he wanted to make sure the podcast is up too.
Well, the podcast, you record it, then you have to upload it. Blog Talk Radio, we're recording right now, matter of fact. So everything you say is going to be part of the show.
Oh, sorry.
That's all right.
Okay. Well,
all right, put me back on.
Can do.
Please.
Bye-bye.
All right.
When a soldier returns to civilian life, they can bring the same values and skills that they learned in the military and apply them to their workplace. So if you're an employer, on behalf of the Coalition to Salute America's Heroes, I urge you to hire smart and bet on a vet. It's a great way to show your appreciation for their service. To learn more, call this number or visit saluteheroes.org.
Every summer we go to Canyon Woods. Love getting outside. Love the hiking. Hate the itching and irritation from poison ivy, bug bites, all the things that keep me inside. So I need something strong.
Cortisone 10 Intensive Healing is clinically proven with the strongest non-prescription itch medicine available for fast, long-lasting relief of itching and irritation with 7 moisturizers to help heal skin.
I finally have the relief I need.
Hey, Jan, check this out.
On my way.
Cortisone 10.
Wasn't hurting anyone.
morning, Tampa Bay, and good morning to our new board runner here. Susie is in the studio with me. She's working very, very hard and well at everything she's doing, and I'll tell you about Susie later. But on the line, our co-host is Mitch Mallard. Of course, I am Augie. But I want to talk
morning,
about
Augie.
Things. Good morning, Mitch. Good morning. Mitch,
you can hear me fine.
I hear you just fine, Mitch.
Can I give out the phone number?
Excuse me?
Let me give out the phone numbers.
The phone numbers? I'll start with the one in the studio number.
941-745-1490.
And the next number?
If that's local. And if those are busy or you just want to call here directly, we have an unlimited number of numbers, and that is 347-989-0132. That's 347-989-0132.
Okay.
And we already have a handful of listeners on that line, and if you're driving and you're out of range, you can call that number. And if you don't hit the one button, we don't call it, but you get to listen.
Okay, Mitch. I'm going to the issues that I'm going to present. We're going to come back to some of the ones that you want to present. But initially, I have a commentary by Roxane Gay, and she's a black woman talking about the death of Sandra Bland. But I'm going to read this, not at this moment, but shortly. We also have the issue of the new inquiry into the Clinton emails, and which is fueling out a lot of questions affecting the polling. And the Donald, of course, is always attracting things. And then you have the Jeb doing a number on Medicare. And boy, is he interesting, and I will get into that later with what that's about. Paul Krugman, and this might be called my Krugman Report, which I hadn't done in some time for the show, but all in the past with my past co-hosts, I've always done a Krugman Report one time or another. This is one that's going to report on Jeb Bush, what he's really all about. And if you think excuse me, Mitch?
I just said we all like Krugman.
Well, whether you like him or not, and some people will like him more and some people will like him less, he's an economist. He's a Keynesian economist, which means he wants you to spend money when money is cheap on the people, on the infrastructure, on jobs, which is what we didn't do enough of when we came out of the mess that Gee Whiz put us into. But, you know, so be it. Anyhow, but Sandra Bland is a case study in what we are doing in this country weekly. I'm tired of writing about slain black people. This is Roxane Gay writing, particularly when those responsible police officers, the very people obligated to serve and protect. I'm exhausted. I experienced a specific exhaustion with alarming frequency. One of the greatest lies perpetuated on our culture today is the notion the dash cameras in police cruisers and body cameras on police officers are tools of justice. Video evidence, no matter the source, can document injustice, but rarely does this incontrovertible evidence keep black people safe or prevent future injustice. Sandra Bland was 28 years old, was pulled over this month earlier in Waller County, Texas. She was pulled over for a routine traffic stop by Officer State Trooper Brian T. Insignia. Well, she was driving while black. That's why she was pulled over, more than likely. And the reality is that black women and men are pulled over every day for this infraction of not signaling before you make a lane change. How many out there do the same thing?
At Wagon Train.
This goes on. We all know a lot about Miss Bland by now. She's been in the news again and again and again. Recently, my brother and I were talking on the phone as he drove to work. He is the chief executive of a publicly traded company. He was dressed for work, driving a BMW. He was using a hands-free system of communication. These particulars shouldn't matter, but they do in a world where we have to constantly mourn the loss of black lives and memorialize them with hashtags. And this, during the course of our conversation, he was pulled over by an officer who said he looked like an escapee from Pelican Bay State Prison in California. It was a strange story for any number of reasons. My brother told me he'd call me right back. In the minutes later, my chest tightened. I worried. I stared at the phone. And when he called back, no more than 7 or 8 minutes had passed. He joked, I thought it was my time. I thought this was it. In other words, he thought he was under death sentence because it's hard to trust the police, especially if you're black. In any event, each time I get in my car, this is Ms. Gay speaking here, I make sure I have my license, my registration, insurance cards, make sure my seatbelt is fastened. I place my cell phone in the handset-free dock. I check and double-check and triple-check these details because when I get pulled over, not if I get pulled over, I want there to be no doubt I am following the letter of the law. I do this knowing that it doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter if I'm following the letter of the law or not. Law enforcement, I was interrupted there. Sorry about that. And I lost track of where I was reading here. Law enforcement officers see only the color of my skin, and in the color of my skin they see criminality, deviance, a lack of humanity. There is nothing I can do to protect myself from what I am. During the ill-fated traffic stop, most of which was caught on camera, Mr. Insignia, the state trooper, asked Ms. Bland why she was irritated, and she told him. She answered the question that was asked. Her voice was steady and confident. Mr. Insignia didn't like her tone, as if she should have been joyful about a traffic stop. How many people out there are happy when they're stopped by a cop? I can't imagine that being the case. That's an interesting point.
Nobody's happy.
That's right. But she's black, remember that. He told Ms. Bland to put her cigarette out. She's in her car. Her door is closed. She's not attempting to get out. She's smoking in her car. It's totally improper for him to require that. But he obviously wanted to require that. As she continued to protest, she was placed in handcuffs because he insisted that she leave the car, and he threatened to light her up with a taser. Ms. Bland was forced to leave the car. She continued to protest. She was placed in handcuffs. She was treated horribly. She was treated as less than human. She protested her treatment. She knew and stated her rights, but it didn't matter. Her black life, her black body did not matter. Because Ms. Sandra Bland was driving while black, because she was not subservient in the manner this trooper preferred, a routine traffic stop became a death sentence. Even if Ms. Bland did commit suicide, there is an entire system of injustice whose fingerprints left bruises on her throat. In his impassioned new memoir, Between the World and Me, Ta-Nehisi Coates writes, in America, it is a tradition of America to destroy the black body. It is the heritage. I would take this bold claim a step further. It is also a tradition to try to destroy the black spirit. I don't want to believe our spirits can be broken. Nonetheless, increasingly, as a black woman in America, I do not feel alive. I feel like I am the living dead. Now, that's a pretty damning commentary on what is passing for democracy. Democracy applies to people, individuals. And, of course, this country was founded on property, which was women, property, which was blacks. They were property. They had no voting rights. They had no real rights. And Salem women were constantly called witches and their property stolen from them, using that excuse, under religion. So this game of playing the card of democracy, that we're all equally treated, you have to refer to people as being human and equally human, and understand what that means to understand what is human. If we are really the free country that we say we are, we do that willingly and without doubt. Obviously, those questions are still unanswered. much. Those are some of my early comments. I'm going to go into the Jeb Bush thing on what he wants to do to Medicare and what Hillary's situation is, and of course, Bob.
Yeah, I just want to make a comment.
Sure.
I just want to say, you know, this is happening like weekly. That's hitting the national news. And what we don't see is, we don't see when people are abused and they're not killed. You know, when they're nearly killed, when their rights are abused and when they're arrested falsely, it doesn't make the national news. But this is happening daily. And it's happening in Manatee County. And, you know, we need to stop it here. What's going to prevent a police officer recognizing maybe they're from one political party and they see somebody from the other political party pulling them over and creating a scenario? You know, and where's the line get drawn here? And it could happen right here, and probably has happened right here in Manatee County.
I think we know it's happened. And down in Sarasota a year ago, a police officer jumped on the hood of a car, jumped physically onto the hood of the car, shot through the windshield of the car, killed a young kid, and claimed the reason he did it because the car threatened him. But he, you know, and the same kind of accident, so-called, happened up in, I forget where 42 bullets went in, two people were sitting in the front seat of a car. The windshield was shredded by bullets by a police officer, and it just is becoming so common we're not surprised anymore. And there's no surprise when you see this sort of behavior, but to say the police officers aren't part of the community, that they don't come from the community, that they don't know or care what the community says, I think that is where the problem really is. In Ferguson, Charleston, the criminal goes into someone's church and murders 9 people. I mean, this is common behavior on people who are supposed to protect us. They're without license, they're without professionality, and they're without soul or concern. And I think this is the time for change is at hand, and I think we've got to really look at that.
Go ahead. If I could just say one more thing. This is happening all over Florida. It's happened right here in Manatee County. I know firsthand how this has happened. But the police will arrest somebody, and they'll put them in the back of a hot squad car. In Florida here, you leave the air conditioner off, the windows up for about 15 minutes, and the inside of that car is about 150 degrees. And then they'll put the newly arrested person in the back of that car for 15 minutes and drive over. And now they're dehydrated. They're little. And they're not, it has effects on the body. And in 15 minutes, if somebody's health is weak, it can lead to a heart attack. The blood pressure goes up. So when they bring them into the booking room and they're being videotaped, it looks like they're on drugs. And that's what they like to insinuate. But they're not on drugs. The police put them on the back of a hot squad car.
Wait a minute now, Mitch. You raised something I've not heard of. That's a tactic that by criminals call police. That's a new one. Do you know this happened in Manatee County particularly?
I do know, and we could save it for a future show where I'll have more.
We need to get somebody in here that's been under that condition, maybe his attorney, and talk about this, because that is a hellish, that should be criminal behavior on the part of the police. It's, if you can't do that to a child, what gives you the permission to do it to anyone where you basically lock them into a sealed car? I mean, that is amazing. That blows my mind, Mitch. It's truly something here.
All right.
Make a note on there.
We'll
so talk anyway,
after the show, and we'll have a future show on it.
That is very true. In any event, we've got the situation with Jeb Bush. He's got a proposal out. He's really a nice guy, isn't he? He looks just gentle. He makes Donald Trump look just so crazy and everything else. Well, let's see, I've got to, just a second. Okay. Yes. Oh, well, I've got a commentary here from the board runner here, Miss Susie. If you do it to a child, or if you do it to a dog, you go to jail. Well, golly gee whiz, they're going to jail anyway, aren't they? What a deal. What a plus. Wow. Amazing. Thank you, Susie, for that commentary. That's great. Paul Krugman, the economist, here's what he says. Medicare turns 50 years old this week, and it's been a very good half century. Before the program went into effect, Ronald Reagan warned that it would destroy American freedom. It didn't. As far as anyone can tell, what it did do was provide a huge improvement in financial security for seniors and their families. And in many cases, it's literally been a lifesaver as well. And I can speak personally, I would be financially destroyed without it. I went through a very tough time a couple of years ago. But the right has never abandoned its dream of killing the program. It's really no surprise that Jeb Bush recently declared that while he wants to let those already on Medicare keep their benefits, we need to figure out a way to phase out this program for others. In other words, if you don't qualify in time, you don't get it. And what does qualifying mean? It means the age of 65 or thereabouts. You hit it, you got full health care. If you don't, you don't. What's surprising, however, is the argument he chose to use, which might have sounded believable 5 years ago, but now looks completely out of touch. In this, as in other spheres, Mr. Bush often seems like Rip Van Winkle, who slept through everything that has happened since he left the governor's office. After all, he's still boasting about Florida's housing bubble boom. Actually, before I get to Mr. Bush's argument, I guess I need to acknowledge that a Bush spokesman claims that the candidate wasn't actually calling for an end to Medicare. He was just talking about things like raising the age of eligibility. So instead of 65, hey, let's put it off till you're 70. Let's put it off, let's put it off, let's put it off. There are two things to say about this claim. First, it's entirely false in context. Mr. Bush was obviously talking about converting Medicare into a voucher system along the lines proposed by Paul Ryan. Now, there's also a proposal, and there's always been a proposal in the book, and right now Medicare, as far as cost, is going down significantly. It's almost on a... I don't want to say break-even basis, but it's working fast in that direction because the improvements of the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, Romney Care, that happened in Massachusetts, the Heritage Foundation Care that was created this, Obamacare, has lowered health care costs because databases and so forth have been refined and is getting better as we go. Gosh, you can't make it seriously effective because that would disprove the reason for having 30% of the cost of health care that goes to insurance companies. We wouldn't need insurance companies anymore. Why do you need... Oh, I know the question. If you don't need an insurance company to take care of you, and a hospital can do it, and a doctor can do it, and a nurse can do it, what the heck do you need, for crying out loud? An insurance company to be a broker for your health care? Amazing. Susie, you've got a bit of laughter. Would you like to have health care that you didn't have to pay 30% on top for an insurance company?
I've heard so many things about this health care that I got so mad. Like, I hate having to pay for health care. It doesn't make sense to me. If you go to the emergency room, they have to treat you anyway. So that's how I live my life lately.
Well, Susie,
so the broker for health care might be the funniest analogy I've heard for it.
What was that again? Run that by me.
When you said a broker for health care might be the funniest analogy I've heard for it.
Well, that's what you got when you had an insurance company. And for the 3 million people that monitor your phone calls for insurance companies are there to tell you whether you got coverage or not. And the Affordable Care Act, they do put them in competition, what they call exchanges or baskets, if you will, so that they're a little bit in competition to keep the price down from what it used to be, which was much worse. Some people say, well, in the Affordable Care Act, your prices are going up. If you make between $16,000 and $30,000, you pay basically zip.
Yeah.
And that's where it's at today. I don't know if you have the Affordable Care Act or not.
I'm under my mom until I'm 26.
Oh, you're 26.
I had bought my own health. I was working at this place called Colony Cove, and they had pretty good insurance. And I was making pretty decent money. I was working a lot of overtime. I'd get like 70 hours a week. And I bought my own insurance. I was like, I'm making money and I can do whatever. And they took like $300 from me every time I got a check.
Yep.
And I've still not gone to the hospital. So.
Mm-hmm. So you're healthy and you feel that there's not much point in it. And
yeah.
So you don't do it.
I mean, yeah.
But you shouldn't have to do it. If you travel overseas or into Canada and you collapse and you go to the hospital, they will let you out. They will not send you bills. They won't, or if they do, they really won't enforce it.
Yeah.
It's free. I've been in hospitals in Europe. I know that's true. And I had insurance, but I never told them about it. Did not need to. They don't require it.
I don't understand insurance. I also don't understand car insurance.
Everybody
should just take care of, like, if you hit somebody and you know you did it.
You
want to
cut the deal between yourself and someone else on a car accident.
Yeah,
that's a little bit different because you can have what is called extra liability or, you know.
Yeah, like more humans in the car. Like, I understand insurance in theory, but.
Sure. Go ahead, Mitch.
Yeah, I just say, like, in France, the way they run their hospitals is, like, each department, you have the emergency room, and they'll have so many doctors on staff, you know, per shift, nurses and orderlies and whatever, assistants and clerical people. But they're not worried about, oh, you had that, so we have to bill you for this. You had that, because they don't bill you. So they don't have a team of people following a paper trail of how to bill you. And the doctors don't get... The doctors don't get paid on how much work they do. They show up that day, and the doctors are well paid in France. And when the doctors go to medical school and undergraduate school and medical school, they don't pay for tuition. So, one, they don't come out of a doctor going to medical school, you know, who comes from a middle-class family is probably $400,000 or $500,000 in debt by the time they graduate.
Mitch, hold on a second. You're talking about French doctors, and then you're talking about doctors having a lot of debt. The French...
All right, well, let me get his point.
But
so
I'm a little
France,
bit confused.
The doctors,
which doctors...
Just let me continue. I'll unconfuse you. Well, the bottom line is, the ERs in France, the staff that's on duty gets paid a salary. They don't get paid for piecework. In the United States,
What's that have to do with the education?
Yeah, let me keep those separate. You're right. Let me keep those separate. So when you go to the ER, you know, what they're worried about is, and they don't even worry about what was consumed so much for you. At the end of each night or shift or whatever, they do inventory. And if the inventory on bandages or syringes or whatever they use goes down to a certain point, they reorder. But they don't link it to each patient. You know what the cost added to our medical care, because every time any little thing happens, there's a paper trail, and then you get a bill for that little item, and the amount of human resources, the time it takes to follow that patient through and bill that for everything,
mm-hmm.
that adds 30% to the cost.
Well, Mitch,
30% markup.
Mitch, I think you were making a point earlier. I thought you were making anyway. I think this is where I'm.
Well, there's two points.
Well,
just
before we do that, here's what I understood your point to be. One, you were talking about the cost for doctors. The cost for doctors is whatever it is. The doctors in Europe go to education free. They don't pay for their education all the way to becoming doctors, internship, everything else. In the case of the United States, they come away from medical school with a huge debt. They had to pay for themselves. All students in this country doing upper education levels have a huge debt. So people are scratching their head looking, why should they be different? Well, if you want your system to work in the country, you don't burden the people that are going to make it work the best. That's your educated people. So if you're going to overburden them, what's going to happen to the rest of us? And the fact is your health care system can't be burdened by the doctors and the nurses all having a big cost, which is the way America operates. and with all the profit being operated and taken from the premiums paid for by each and every person for having insurance by the insurance companies. So the only beneficiary here is the insurance companies. Charge and they run the cost up. There's $3 billion in health care in this country. 30% of it is in profit and overhead by the insurance companies. That's just a fact. Right
sure.
now, we're. I beg your pardon. You're right. Trillion. It's $3 trillion. You're right. So that's everything. Medicare, the whole nine yards. It's not Medicare by itself. It's the whole thing. And the biggest cost is people in the higher echelon under Medicare. That's why Bush is bringing that up. He wants to cut Medicare so he can give the money to the military. And that's the way the conservative mind is. We got to have a military. We're always scaring people. We're always under threat. We can't think for ourselves and realize that we're making the problem when we do that. The military is the most wasteful way to spend money that you can possibly imagine. And when you over-militarize, you do what Russia did. You go under financially. You want to break this country? Overprice the military. Even Eisenhower, who had 91% marginal tax rates as he was president, said the military-industrial complex will kill us. And that's what we're working on real hard, continuing military. Oh, we got to put boots on the ground here. Oh, we got to put boots on the ground there. What a good deal for this country. What a good deal. 941-745-1490 if you want to have conversation with us on these things, if you agree or disagree. We'll go get into Hillary's emails here shortly and to Donald Trump, but I think we're going to be coming to a break here shortly, so this is where we're headed, where we've been, and we'll be back to Mitch on the air and the subjects at hand.
You can also call toll-free at 1-888-761-1490.
Or 347-989-0132. That's both the listen line, and if you want to participate, hit the one button. We have a few people in the listen-only mode, and if you'd like to jump into the conversation, hit the one button, and I'll introduce you. 347-989-0132.
Commercials here, not to the theme song, so we'll come back to you.
This part of the Morning Edge is brought to you by Callens, Little, and Delgado, practicing personal injury, criminal defense, and family law. Call 941-749-1446. 941-749-1446. Sarasota is home to a true gift, the Posture Clinic of Sarasota, with Dr. Mark D'Amato, 4450 South Tamiami Trail. Dr. D'Amato is a veterinary chiropractor, treating horses, dogs, or your favorite four-legged friend. First and foremost, animal chiropractic care is not intended to replace traditional veterinary medicine. Complementary care is a type of care that works with your vet, and certainly not instead of them. To find out more information, call Dr. Mark D'Amato at 941-927-7009. That's 941-927-7009. Oh, and by the way, Dr. Mark treats two-legged patients, too.
We're back, and we've had a number of conversations here already. The interesting one that's looming in the ether out there is a new inquiry into Hillary Clinton's emails. Oh my gosh, She is handing out through her server that nobody has seen. She's handing out information that could be very, very serious. A new letter by intelligence investigators to the Justice Department says secret government information may have been compromised by Ms. Hillary Rodham Clinton's private server, underscoring an inescapable reality for her presidential campaign. Email is forever. Isn't that the theme song for Goldfinger?
Oh, yeah.
Gold is forever. Yeah. The Inspector General of the U.S. Intelligence Community recently alerted the Justice Department to the potential compromise of the classified information arising from Clinton's server. The IG also sent a memo to members of Congress that he had identified potentially hundreds of classified emails among the 30,000 that Clinton had provided to the State Department. A concern the office said it had raised the FBI with the FBI counterintelligence officials. As this goes on, a statement from the intelligence inspector Charles McCullough and his counterpart in the State Department, Steve Linick, said that McCullough's office found four emails containing classified. Holy cow. Have you ever deleted an email? I have. I maybe did. I not provide my. I don't know. This is very, 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 very upsetting. Containing classified information in a limited sample of 40 emails. The classified information should never have been transmitted via unclassified personal system. You know, this is a longer article than perhaps I want to get into. I will come back to it if necessary. But the joke's on us, folks. The joke's on us. There's 28 missing pages in the 9/11 report of the Twin Towers. Susie, I think you're familiar with that, aren't you? Yeah. Just 28 pages. They were cut out, blacked out, not lines, the entire section, because it mentioned Saudi Arabia. There's strong suspicion. And former Governor Graham has brought this up. This has come up on the show a number of times. All classified. Now, I've recommended, not just recently, that I think it's time for people to break classification rules because I think they're used to hide things. Now, there's a classification situation when 3,000 people died and a certain group of people in the monarchy of Saudi Arabia might be responsible, may have paid for that, and they're tied to the Bush family. Oh, my God, we can't have that. We can't know that. But these emails, these four emails that we know about with Hillary and some other, and a server by Hillary, that Benghazi, you know, the four people died in Benghazi, almost 3,000 died in 9/11. We can't know about that, but we got to know about the four. They were leaders. They were important people. I mean, the ones in 9/11 weren't important. Golly gee whiz here. Go ahead, Mitch.
This email scandal, it's not a scandal. It's all political. The Republicans go, oh, we can grab onto this. And if you heard the words, the phrase, there may be, there could be, we don't know if there isn't. There's no evidence pointing to any wrongdoing. All the Secretary of States, the past few Secretary of States, had their own email servers. And before that, there was an email. And the reason they do that is because the subjects that they're emailing back and forth to are so sensitive that they're fearful of even within the government that there be a breach. And from what I understand, Hillary didn't just go to Best Buy and buy a computer with a built-in email server and set it up. She hired us. A company that specializes in security. That was a highly secure email server. You're dealing with State Department issues, and the Republicans are trying to make it sound like we don't know what happened. Well, there's a lot of classified things the Secretary of State does, and you should be on the Intelligence Committee of Congress if you want to know what happened. And that's what we have representatives for. They're just trying to make a scandal where none exists.
Well, let me read some more here, then you might have a slight extra thought.
It's a non-scandal.
Well, I'm not saying it is or isn't, but some people are actually thinking that there is a bit of a scandal here. I'm just saying, well, before I say what I'm going to say, I'm going to read some more here. There's little dispute among intelligence officials that Clinton should have been more careful with her information through her behavior, though her behavior was likely not criminal. So if it wasn't criminal, what was it, civil? I mean, you know, what's going on here? This is what's stated here. This is a report by Lisa Lohrer and Eric Tucker for the Associated Press. In any event, they say they assume that all email was transmitted from Clinton's home server is in possession of the Russian or Chinese intelligence service, who would have easily bypassed whatever security measures she took. They, too, spoke on condition of anonymity because they weren't authorized to discuss the Clinton's email situation. They couldn't do that publicly. Whether a security violation or not, the risk for Democrats is that questions about her email harden into an early narrative about Clinton's honesty and management skills. Already, Republicans have spent months depicting Clinton as a creature of Washington who flouts the rules for personal gain. So this is a political thing, and it's usable, and it's effective because it creates an impression that somebody's not trustworthy. Well, there's a lot of things we don't know. I don't want to start excusing Hillary or anyone else, but when you have something much more serious, where we went to two different wars over 9/11, we went to Afghanistan that didn't attack us. We went to Iraq that didn't attack us, that supposedly had nuclear weapons in Iraq that didn't happen. And it was all under the handling of one particular president, gee whiz. And that's about what we got back from him when the headline of the... That's George Bush Jr. Yeah, I call him Gee Whiz because he always seemed like a light bulb went in his head 2 minutes before his mouth opened up.
Oh, I call him Baby Bush.
Well, whatever you call him, I call him Gee Whiz. In any case,
right.
When they put the headline of the New York Post that says Bush knew, and the headline letters were 2 inches high, Bush knew, that everyone understood that to mean he knew in advance that 9/11 was about to happen. Condi Rice waited all night with the lights of the White House on the entire night before she spoke on what he had said, and then went before the press and said, well, he couldn't have known. We couldn't have known. So that was the answer to that very condemning situation and all the unnecessary killing of the Iraqi people, who now are going to become Iranian, who are now going to become Kurds, who are now going to become other people, because Iraq doesn't exist anymore as a country. And that's just a matter of realizing what it does turn into. And I think actually for the good, ironically, after all of this death and mayhem and cost to this country, $3 trillion we poured into those two wars, and we took billions of dollars in plane loads of raw cash and dumped it into Iraq, and it all disappeared. I don't know how that could have happened, but it did. And they had who was the guy? The guy was in charge of New Orleans and the mess up there. Mitch, you remember him? The guy was in charge of the Iraq thing. He's the same guy. I can't think of his name. Anyway, but he was
the colonel.
Yeah, well, almost a colonel, but they disbanded all of the military heads under Saddam Hussein because it couldn't be contaminated by someone like that. They may be able to run the military. Turns out all those guys became part of ISIS. They're Sunni Muslims, and they're not radicalized because the Sunnis are radical in the extreme form of the handling of Sunni religion, already radicalized out of the madrasas, out of Saudi Arabia. And who pulls the string on all that? Who's bombing Yemen right now? Saudi Arabia. Who's making problems? Who's threatening to get nuclear weapons? Saudi Arabia. Gee whiz. And who is saying, watch out for Iran, watch out for Iran? This deal is crazy. Israel, Israel. I mean, if you don't know who your friends are any better than Israel seems to, you're going to have problems, and you're going to make problems for yourself down the pipe. So I know you have opinions on that one, Mitch. So what are your thoughts? Mitch, are you there?
Wow. Well, yeah, I'm right here. Let me first talk when Bush went into Iraq, he consulted with Saudi Arabia. And Bush, there's an article, there's a couple of articles, more than one article written about this.
At least a few.
But before he went in there, he consulted with the Sauds and said, we're going to disband the army. And Saudi Arabia said, don't disband the army. And they pointed out to him, this is a handful of top generals that you should get rid of. These are the good generals you should keep. And they also pointed some colonels that they should get rid of. But after that, leave the army intact, leave the military intact, and you put a new, this way the infrastructure of the country's preserved. They also went in, and Bush didn't listen to that. He totally disbanded the army. And then when they went into Iraq, they did that shock and awe.
But it wasn't his.
A great
but
deal
Mitch, it wasn't his fault. It was not his fault. It's everybody else's fault. It was those liberals.
No, it's his fault. He was the decision maker. Wasn't
really?
He? I'm the great decider.
You sure about that?
Well,
I'm pulling your
you
leg,
can blame,
Mitch.
We could debate whether Dick Cheney's more responsible than Bush.
I never mentioned Dick Cheney's name. I did not. Susan's standing here shaking her head. No, you didn't say anything about Dick Cheney. Why would you say Dick Cheney?
Well, you want to know whose fault it is. It's either Bush or Cheney or both of them. It doesn't matter. It's that administration. They made a decision to go into shock and awe. And I watched in horror, you watched in horror, as we went in there and blew up their electrical, their water system, everything else. And why did we do that? Because Halliburton wanted to go in there. They thought we were going to be greeted as liberators, like we're the American army pulling into France, pushing back the Nazis. Well, that wasn't the case. They rose up because we were perceived as an invading army. And Halliburton thought they were going to make a lot of money rebuilding it all. That's why we took it out. So you're saying
the corporations were just, their tongues were hanging down to their knees and they couldn't wait pantingly for this financial moment of replacing all this stuff with American dollars all over again. Wow.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, of course you are. I know you are. You know, Mitch, we probably should touch, but I don't want to get into the Donald speech on immigration today. I want to do that on Wednesday. We have a guest. Yeah. Are you going to be in our studio on Wednesday or?
I'll be in studio.
That's so. When we play the Donald speech, then he says some things interestingly. Excuse me. What's the importance of the Donald? I believe the importance of the Donald is he says everything the Republican white people think. The borders are not safe. Terrorize the people. Frighten the hell out of them. He plays to fear. The place is a mess. He plays to fear. Everything's a mess. Everything's falling apart. Now, the problems... right now he's attacking Scott Walker out of Wisconsin. He said Wisconsin is in a disarray, an economic mess, that instead of having a surplus, they've got a big deficit. And
that's
it's only going to get... Well, I happen to think he's right about that, but the point is he's playing to the fears of people that are going to vote in these primaries, and these people that are voting in these primaries as Republicans are basically white people, not minorities, not Hispanic, not black people.
That's because those are Republicans.
Yes, they are. And so, and yet he gets these big crowds, so he's not getting minorities showing up. And what happened...
He can win the primary. He can win the nomination.
I think you have a real point. I'm not disagreeing with that at all. I mean, I watch Morning Joe faithfully because they have an interesting array of people on Morning Joe who have a variety of opinions. They do think, by the way, that the emails for Hillary, if she doesn't clean up this thing with the server and a few other things, is going to come back to haunt her. But in any event, the Donald is an interesting character here. You can't build a wall and have it mean anything at the Mexican-U.S. border. People can circumvent walls. They can go around them. There is a longer wall to build in the northern edge of the United States. It's called Canada. There's 36 million people there. No hijacker would ever fly into Canada to come down into the United States that way. Gosh, why would they do that? Can you imagine such a thing? Being more facetious than I have a right to be. So
you want to effectively stop Mexican immigration, a mass immigration. You got to build up the Mexican economy, and the Mexican workers have to make a decent wage.
Actually, their economy is doing just fine. It's not Mexicans that are coming across there. It's mostly Central and South Americans who are coming across, especially out of Central America, not Costa Rica, but El Salvador, Ecuador,
right.
Those countries, because not Panama. Those Panama and Costa Rica are pretty solidly safe. The other countries have oligarchs running the show, and their military do the killing of the poor. They steal the land from the poor constantly to where there's nothing left for the poor. And those are the people that are fleeing into the Mexican border. So unless we come up with an orderly way for people to come into this country, who work visas or things of that sort, we're going to have this problem forever. So,
NAFTA was supposed to build the economies of these countries, but what's happened is NAFTA's allowed American corporations to go in there and really just exploit the cheap labor instead of paying them a reasonable wage. That's the component that's missing from NAFTA is a livable wage, environmentally safe, and a work-safe factories. Those are three components.
Well, the problem with NAFTA, Bill Clinton said, my two greatest regrets, he's had a third one too, but he said, my two greatest regrets was NAFTA and Glass-Steagall. Glass-Steagall, when the separation of investment companies and banks was in place, and they could not merge.
Exactly.
And then so those two things were his two biggest claims. And NAFTA was basically we basically took a country that sold beans and corn to the world, that was Mexico, and we took our grain and imposed it upon Mexico as part of the deal, because we subsidized it and made it cheap enough. So we drove the small farmers off their land because they ran out of, they couldn't make any money competing with the cheap U.S. grain. And they became workers coming across the border to work in the north until their economy turned around. And there's not that many Mexicans. There's 90 to 100 million Mexicans in Mexico. And they don't need to come here. They make a pretty good living down there. They don't need to go through the crap that we put them through up here. It's calling them criminals at every turn. Almost no one you could find an exception, just like the guy that was escaped from prison in, I forget where, but he shot a woman and killed her up in San Francisco. And the crazies in the Republican Party yelling about, like, that's an epidemic or something. The epidemic in this country is where I talked about at the beginning of the show, the Sandra Bland situation and the killing of black people by police. That's the epidemic. But in any case, criminality is what you want to point your finger at, remembering that one finger points forward and three point back. But it's always curious who, you know, Pogo says, I see the enemy and he is us. I think that's kind of it, isn't that, Susie? Yeah. But we're coming near the end of the show. Mitch, you want any other comments? Mitch.
I'm looking forward to Wednesday's show.
Yeah, we'll go into the Donald's thing. The Republicans are scared to death of him, you know, debating Donald, the billionaire businessman who has dominated the 2016 Republican race in recent weeks, threatens to do the same when the top 10 GOP candidates, as determined by the national polls, face off in less than 2 weeks. Oh, my God, with bated breath, I cannot wait for that moment. Oh! It's exciting. Just try to ignore him, says Charlie Black.
What's exciting? I'll tell you what's exciting about Donald Trump
is
that the Republicans for decades have been, you know, they bring up these issues, and then when you go, but you say this, but what about that? The Republicans go, shh, you don't want to talk about that part. You don't want to talk about what's going on in Wisconsin, how, you know, how Scott is up there trying to make it sound like look what I've done for Wisconsin, where he's really trashed the economy. Well, don't mention that. Donald Trump will point these things out.
All the things
they want to keep quiet.
You really think Donald Trump's going to say all that? Of course he is.
He is saying it.
Well, I know. I'm joking again. My tongue is stuck in my cheek these days, Mitch, when we talk.
So much so, some Republicans think that Donald Trump is a Democratic plot. He's no friend of Democrats either.
What a thought. A Democratic plant. Oh, no. Charlie Black, a leader of the GOP strategist who has worked on multiple presidential campaigns, says, try to ignore him. The less attention you give him, the better. I wouldn't even look at him. Even without Trump's emergence, the first debate promises to be an unruly affair. Never have been more than 10 candidates taken the stage for a televised Republican presidential debate. Part of the problem is basic math. In a 90-minute debate featuring so many candidates, there could be only enough time for four or five questions with little time left over the interaction between the candidates that makes for an actual debate. And few campaigns expect Trump to respect the time limits or other rules established by the organizer. Can you imagine him breaking the rules? Donald Trump breaks rules. What do you think about that, Susie?
Donald Trump breaks rules? What?
Rules. Well, not in his head. He makes his own rules, so he doesn't break them.
Yeah, I think more applause is in his corner. So, anyway.
Hasn't Donald Trump run for presidency the last couple times, though?
Yes, he went. He did run. He ran.
He does it just for, what's up, man?
Yeah, but
he did not declare as a candidate. Now he's a candidate for the first time.
Previously he did not declare, but now he has. So, and meaning he had to show his financial records. He was probably bankrupt the time before, and now he's not.
I don't know. I've only been old enough to vote once.
So. Oh,
he's very wealthy. He's very, very wealthy.
Yeah. Well, he tells us that all the time. I'm very, very wealthy. If you're
waving my hands around as I say that.
I know. Well, we're coming to the end of the show, and Mitch, we'll see you on Wednesday. And Susie, I want to thank you so much for standing in for Mitch. It's been a real help, and I'm glad you spoke up today. I think that's important. You've got your people in your age category have a lot to say, and you have more to say down the road.
Thanks,
Dad. Well, welcome, okay. Susie.
All right. So if we go to our theme song, we'll be all in business here shortly.
Where's Ed?
The theme song.
I'm dancing.
Wasn't hurt.